You're listening to the Options Insider Radio Network. For more quality options programs, visit www.theoptionsinsider.com or search for Options Insider Radio Network in your podcast provider of choice. Listeners can also access all of our programming through our mobile app, available in iTunes and on Google Play. Don't forget to follow along with your favorite programs and submit your own questions for the hosts at twitter.com/options, facebook.com/theoptionsinsider, or via questions at theoptionsinsider.com.
This is the Option Industry Council's Wide World of Options. Before we start today's show, investors should know that options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. You should not enter into an options transaction until you have read and understood the risk disclosure document, characteristics and risks of standardized options. This brochure is available by visiting optionseducation.org or by calling 1-888-OPTIONS. OIC makes no recommendation with respect to any financial firm. OIC does not make any warranty as to the accuracy, usefulness, timeliness, or the continued availability or existence of information created or maintained by others. Multiple leg strategies involve multiple commission charges. Opinions and strategies expressed by others are not necessarily those of OIC, nor does OIC endorse, warrant, or guarantee products, services, or information described or offered by such firms. Commissions, fees, margins, interest, and taxes have not been included in any of the examples used in this show. These costs impact the outcome of all stock and options transactions. Consult your tax advisor about any potential consequences. None of the information presented in this show should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell security or to provide investment advice. Welcome to the Options Industry Council's Wide World of Options. OIC was created in 1992 to educate investors and their financial advisors about the benefits and risks of exchange-traded equity options. And the Wide World of Options radio show is one of the ways the message is spread. OIC also offers a variety of other resources to those interested in learning more about options, including webinars, podcasts, and live events. For more information, check out optionseducation.org. Now, here's your host, OIC's Director of Individual Investor Education, Joe Burgoyne.
Today's program is a rebroadcast from OIC's webinar program. Every month, we do webinars on a variety of options-related topics. Check out optionseducation.org for more information. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're glad you could join us for the latest installment of the Options Industry Council's webinar series. My name is Alexander, and I'm a staff member here at the OIC. I'll be guiding you through today's webinar, Advanced Learning, Trading Talk with the Pros. I'm pleased to welcome our moderator today, Joe Burgoyne, who is the Director of Retail Education for the Options Industry Council, and is responsible for the institutional, retail, and university outreach educational programs. He has over 30 years of experience within the financial industry and has managed the floor operations at the Philadelphia Stock Exchange for Vandermeulen Options USA and Take Securities. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Joe will bring you our topic today, Advanced Learning, Trading Talk with the Pros. Joe?
Alex, thanks a lot, and welcome everybody. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedules. I'm actually very excited about today because, it's going to be a discussion more geared towards advanced, as Alex said a few times, versus our maybe more typical beginner and intermediate levels. I am, thrilled to have the three panelists joining us today. We got Jim Rose and Russell Rhodes and Kevin Davitt. Jim's from Schwab. Jim, why don't you say hello and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks for having me, Joe. My name is Jim Rozan with Charles Schwab. Just moved over to the education team. I used to support all the branches when it came to options, advanced options. We would do, I would set up live presentations for large trading clubs. It could be up to 200, 300 people. We'd do large events. So now I just came over to the education team this year, and we're blowing out our whole educational our website. We're adding more content. We're doing a lot, and there's four of us on the team, and it's a blast working with clients and teaching about options.
Well, we're happy to have you, and I agree. It is a blast to do this. Russell Rhodes, welcome. I know you've recently moved from the Chicago Board Options Exchange over to Tab. Welcome and say hello to everybody. Tell us a little bit about your background, please.
Sure. As Joe mentioned, I joined Tab Group about 3 or 4 months ago after spending just under a decade with Chicago Board Options Exchange, which is now Cboe Global Markets. Worked in the Options Institute for most of that time. And Joe and I would overlap an awful lot because I would focus on institutions and I would also focus on the colleges. So he and I would tag team a lot of events in the past.
Well, we're tag teaming tonight. Can't wait to get into it. And last but not least, certainly Kevin Davitt, our good friend, also from the Chicago Board Options Exchange. Kevin's also an OIC instructor. Kevin, say hello.
Afternoon. Thank you all for joining. Good to hear from you, Joe, and everybody else on the line. I work for what, as Russell mentioned, is now Cboe Global Markets. I got my start back when this place was just known as CBOE. I was a clerk for one of the bigger market-making firms here on the floor. We had a presence on all of the 4 trading floors back then. I was a market maker for years, and subsequent to that, I traded commodity futures and options. For the past 3 years, I have worked here in the education arm of the exchange. I was fortunate enough to work alongside Russell, and I look forward to what the next hour brings.
Fantastic. Let's do it. I think that, you know, to our listeners, if you have questions, please send them in. We'll get to as many as possible towards the end, but I got a wealth of experience here, and hopefully over the next 45 to 50 minutes, we offer you a lot of interesting ideas about trading. Let's start, Jim, I'm going to start with you first. What drew you to options? How did you learn how to trade?
It's a funny story. So I have 34 years in this crazy world. I wanted to be a doctor. I was a biology major here in Chicago, and I needed a summer job. And my girlfriend at the time, her ex-boyfriend was a trade checker. They paid for school, and he got paid 40 grand working, I don't know, 6 hours in the morning. Thought that was great. Found a company through school, brand new firm, retail firm, started working for them in the summer. Within a year, I'm living in New York running an arbitrage desk. I come back as their youngest broker. I did that for about 10 years, had the opportunity to, and I really didn't learn about options yet. I knew what a call was, I knew what a put was, I knew what the strike prices were. But I had the opportunity, I was offered by one of the lead guys in the NASDAQ to become a market maker. I said, no way. A buddy of mine was working for the firm. He said, you just passed up on the best opportunity of your life. I said, why? They'll train you, they'll give you money, and if you lose it, you owe them nothing. So I went, I checked them out, and sure enough, it was true. And I went back to the guy who offered me the job, and actually gave it to somebody else. I had to wait 3/4 of a year, finally got in and traded out on the Peak Coast, and then came back to Chicago for another 12 years as a market maker, and it was a blast. Love trading options. It is so much fun. You know, you have total control of your destiny when you trade. And people think it's complicated, and it's really not. It just takes practice. Understand the markets. Understand what you're trading specifically. What product is it? A stock? Is it indices? And it's practice. And for me, it was a blast. Now I get to share my background, my knowledge with clients.
Very good. I'm going to come back to you on some of those things. Kevin Davitt, you want to offer your thoughts on what drew you to options and how you learned to trade?
Sure. So like Jim, like a lot of people in this business, the route here was sort of an indirect one. I grew up outside of Chicago as well, and for many, many years, this business was very provincial. That is absolutely no longer the case. But I grew up caddying, and a number of the members at this club that I worked at, I noticed a corollary, and in some way, a lot of them were affiliated with either the Board of Trade, the CME, or CBOE. And so I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to college as a result of my caddying, and one of the people that was instrumental in that happened to run a market making firm. Fast forward to after college, where I thought I was going to be an attorney, and I got an interview to be a clerk down on this floor here at the CBOE. And I'm of the opinion now, many, many years later, that kind of no matter what you do in life, you are a clerk of some sort. And so in this business or in law, they call it clerking, but really you just get to stand next to people that have done something that requires a skill set for some time frame, to ask them questions, to learn what works, to learn what doesn't work, and ultimately to be able to either succeed or fail on your own. And that's what brought me to this business. I ended up being a market maker for that firm that was eventually sold to a big Canadian bank. But the experience is a similar one by a ton of people in and around Chicago, New York, San Francisco, and Philadelphia.
Russell, how about your experience in terms of what drew you to options and how you learned to trade?
Well, I did not grow up in the Chicago area, but I grew up down in Memphis and knew that I did not want to stay in Tennessee for the rest of my life. Came up here for the first time. You know, everybody goes to Florida spring break. I come to Chicago and visit the floor of the Board of Trade. Had a family friend that took me around. Explained, you know, how things worked. It told me, you know, what had led him to move up here and become a runner and then work his way up. And I kind of did that stereotypical route. Ended up off the floor pretty quickly. I actually am one of the few OIC instructors that really didn't trade on the floor, or one of the former OIC instructors didn't really trade on the floor, because electronic trading kicked in. They started Globex when I had just started becoming a runner. So I think I was really a benefit, an early beneficiary, because I kind of liked electronic trading better than floor trading. Worked for some hedge funds, and then was really fortunate enough to get hired to be an instructor at the Options Institute at SIBO, and found that I really did like doing research and coming up on different ways to use the options, and really did take to that job. And then that's what's led me to TAB.
Well, that passion for research is also taking you down the road towards your PhD, which is right around the corner, I understand. So, you know, good for you.
I'm working on it. Thanks.
You know, I think, as you know, people have tuned in today, we really want to, and by the way, Russell, we're not going to hold it against you, the fact that, you know, you never trade on the floor. That's just fine. We love that perspective. We want to offer our listeners, you know, kind of how we think as traders. So, Kevin, I'm going to come to you first. You got a blank canvas. You're ready to initiate a position. How do you decide what product you want to trade? An index, a stock, an ETF? You know, what kind of position? Long gamma, short gamma, long vol, short vol, you know, delta? Walk us through your mindset, if you would.
Sure. That is probably the most difficult question for most individual traders. And that mindset, what's required of that, I think is very, very different than a market-making mindset. It is incredibly difficult. You know, we're kind of potentially overwhelmed with product. There's something like 3,650 optionable products, plus or minus probably 100. And so the alternatives, or the options, no pun intended, are kind of limitless. So what I try to do is stick to a handful of names that I am comfortable with. And in some cases, those are individual equities. In other cases, they're ETFs. In some cases, they're indexes. And in others, it's commodities. Now, I have been exposed over the past 20 years to all of those things. So I am, at this point, conversant and comfortable with the idiosyncrasies as far as each of them go. Maybe in a little bit, we'll talk about why I might skew a little bit more toward an index or something. But for the time being, The question is, when I identify something, ideally there's a catalyst, and ideally I can articulate a clearly laid plan for why I'm trading whatever the product is, what my time frame is, so duration, what my target is if things work out right, and what sort of risk I'm comfortable assuming. And what I've found, particularly in shifting from floor to off floor and just trading individually, is that like anything else that's difficult or requires discipline or rewards discipline, if I write it down, that whole thing, why I'm trading this thing, what if it goes right, what if it goes wrong, what's my time frame, I tend to be well served by that. Again, just to recap, something that I'm comfortable with already. I try not to just seek out what's hot. There's a word that a lot of traders throw around or did historically about edge. In my mind, as an individual trader, one of the kind of few ways to really find some edge is to grow comfortable with specific names over time, and I think you can find some edge there. So that's sort of the Cliff Notes version of my typical process.
Okay, and we will touch on some of that, as you mentioned, those three key points for you. We'll come back to that. Russell, how about your perspective on, you know, where do I start? What do I trade? What type of position do I establish?
Well, I, you know, to reiterate, I think Kevin's most important point where he said, you know, focus on just a handful of names I think another way to say that is don't try to trade everything. If you're watching the business networks, you're going to hear, you know, dozens of stocks mentioned even in just a single hour. And, you know, if you're excited about becoming a beginner trader, you might try to look at all those different ideas. I do think that one of the ways that individuals can compete is by, you know, just focusing on some names that you know. I followed the retail stocks for some time, so I've always felt like I have a little bit better knowledge than the average person on those. But when you're approaching a derivative trade, and you mentioned the academic thing about me, I teach derivatives at the graduate school level, and we go through all the complicated math. But in reality, when you're going to do a trade, it should start out with what's your outlook price-wise for the underlying, and what's the timing of that outlook? And then you back into some sort of derivative trade. And then finally, one thing to always keep in mind is trying to come up with some way to offset the time decay, which is a very difficult hurdle in the option industry or whenever you do an option trade. One of the worst things that I think a beginner trader can do is buy a call or buy a put because they're bullish or bearish, and they may directionally get some things right, but if they don't overcome that time decay, they still might lose money. So having some sort of strategy that offsets that time decay is something that I always encourage people to do.
Okay, sounds like spreading, which we'll also touch on some more. Jim, your perspective to an open canvas and just getting started. How do you approach it?
Well, Kevin and Russell, I mean, you guys hit it right on the head. It's you start small, and like in the pit, you'd have five, maybe eight stocks. You become familiar with them. They become your best friends. Now, as a customer, it's stocks that I'm familiar with. Let's say there's 10 of them, and I have 20 other stocks on my watch list that I know fairly well. You know, just to reiterate, you have to be familiar with the product. You take it to bed with you. It's your best friend. You know its range, how much you can move a day on average, a week, how much you can move a month on earnings. And then, as Russell mentioned, the time or how long do you really want to be in the trade? I am not an investor. I don't buy and hold a stock and cross my fingers. I trade options. So I'm in less than 3 months. Probably my sweet spot is 6 weeks or less. I have to just be a narrow range. I like the idea. And I'm not sure, Russell, if you're alluding to when you buy an option, it's a time decay, it's a decaying asset. That means you're going to lose money every day if that stock doesn't move through your long strike. So we like to take advantage of it. You could sell options.
And as Joe mentioned, we could sell them off as spreads. So there's so many different combinations you could do with options to participate in the market, up, down, sideways. And just to reiterate, start small, you guys. Find a stock you like and read up on all the news, look at charts, do everything you can to feel comfortable with it. Become familiar with just a small number of products if you're new to trading.
Okay, and Jim, with regards to that number, and maybe not black or white, but that range, when you say a small number, what would you say is the optimal number of positions, you know, as an options trader?
Stocks to trade or positions? So for one stock, I might have three different positions on, especially if there's a news event pending. In the grand scheme of things, I probably have anywhere from 3 to 8 stocks that I'm trading or trying to put on trades with. And I'll have maybe 1 to 3 bills for each one. That can be a good move. Sometimes I'm traveling and I can't participate or I can't pay attention. More importantly, I can't be in the game. Granted, I have our phone app and I'll be trading in the airport if need be, but I like to be watching it. I like to be in the game. In the morning, before the opening, I'm looking at news, and always just before we close at 2:30, I'm always checking out the markets. So,
sure.
Does that help?
No, I got it.
Does that help Joe too much?
Yeah, I think we're just trying to give our listeners a perspective from some people have been around the block for quite a while. Russell, what are your thoughts on that? Number of positions?
I'm going to kind of answer it the same way that Jim did as far as more about the number of instruments. And what I mean by that is maybe I've got a bullish or a bearish outlook on a specific stock, and I might have multiple positions that all kind of work together with that same outlook. I just had a bearish outlook on for a long time, and the thing kept working its way higher. Well, I owned some long-term puts on it, and every time we got somewhat of a dip or an increase in volatility, I would sell shorter-dated puts against that. And I might have 4 or 5 different option positions on that single name, but those positions are really based on a combination of a short-term and a longer-term outlook for the stock. So I never would go with more than, Jim said 3 to 8. Well, I'm kind of right in the middle. I usually have about 5 different ideas that I'm working, and I'm pretty much trading around them short term with options. And the main reason that I'm trading around them short time or, short term is to overcome some of that time decay.
Okay. Makes sense. Kevin, any different perspective here?
No, I think one of the typical hurdles or difficulties that people run into is trying to tackle too many things. Like, you need to learn how an option, any derivative works on a single product before you can appropriately apply it elsewhere. And there are so few sort of barriers these days. They were significantly higher before. Like, it's very easy to access the market, and they're incredibly narrow bid-ask spreads, but you really need to understand what it is you're setting out to do before you spread that across 10 different products. So I would simply echo what has already been said eloquently, is learn with 1 or 2 things, and in time, you can either scale up your size or broaden out that portfolio.
Okay, and speaking to size, let's maybe roll the conversation a little bit towards risk here. How big is too big a position is, I think, a key question for all investors to ask themselves. And along those lines, and Russell, I'll go to you first. Again,
sure.
Kind of getting started. How do we assess risk, and how does a trader implement, risk parameters? How do you go about it? How do you think about that?
Well, you know, the risk parameter, one of the beautiful things about options is they allow you to know exactly what your risk is when you put positions on. And I don't think, I really don't believe, and I've been criticized for this statement in the past, but I really don't believe that individuals should be, you know, selling options without something to offset their risk, or taking naked short option positions. You usually have to get pretty high levels of permission from your broker. I don't want that permission, because I not that I think I would ever take on the unlimited risk, but with options, you know, you can put on a position and you can draw those really cool graphs that I make the students draw by hand, and they show you what your maximum potential loss is. And you know, whatever you happen to be, whatever happens to be your personal risk parameters, are you not willing to lose more than 2% or 5% on a single position? Well, you can look at what you put on and know that within the option market.
And we will come, as we talk risk in a general sense here, we'll come back to individual positions shortly. Jim, let me ask you about this whole idea. How do you define risk? What's too big? You know, how do you think about this?
For the risk itself, you know, it starts with how much money you want to lose. Well, how much money do you have? So maybe you have $50,000 in your account and you want to use 4%, $2,000 per trade. That's a good starting point. Let's say $2,000. You could buy 10 calls at 2, you could buy 5 calls at 4. This way, whenever you buy an option, that's the most you could lose. So right off the bat, I'm adjusting the amount of contracts based on how much I want to lose. Always know the most you can lose. And it's not how much you can make. Oh, I'm going to make a lot of money. Always worry about worst case scenario. So for me, it starts with how much I want to lose.
That makes sense. I thought that way myself for a long time on the floor. Kevin, how about your approach to risk?
So I think what Jim just said is super candid and very informative. How much do you want to lose? That is such an interesting way to frame the question, and I think very appropriate, because most people, our brains kind of want to go to the reward side of things. That's how stuff is marketed. But the people that tend to be most successful in this endeavor in protecting and growing capital over a given time frame tend to think about the risk first. And what if I'm wrong? Because I have been doing this long enough to know, man, I am wrong often. But if you are savvy enough to understand ways to spread, ways to offset that risk, it's fine to be wrong. So the risk and the size question is very, very much a personal one. Typically, I do still, and I know this is kind of wrong, think in pure dollar terms what I'm willing to risk, when my more analytical self says you should think in terms of percentage of overall capital. I also, when you started to bring this up, I thought kind of about my upbringing. And so I grew up in an Irish Catholic household and went to Catholic schools and was inundated with Catholic guilt. And so there was this, you know, talk of conscience growing up in grade school and stuff. And my mom would harp on that, like, if something doesn't feel right. But in trading, there is a certain degree of truth to that. If there's something telling you, I'm uncomfortable with this, if your gut is telling you that, then you probably have something on too big. So there's a couple of things at work there. If you're uncomfortable, you're probably sized wrong.
Thank you. We are going to get into the weeds, I think, with because we're talking offsetting decay, you know, by selling something. So I do want to get into some specific strategy types. But one more overall question with regards to risk. We've all had it happen to us countless times. You know, we got a position on, it goes against us. What's the approach, you know, when something goes against us? Russell, I'll start with you. Do you close it out? Do you adjust? You know, what happens when something goes the wrong way?
I typically, and I think I'm atypical, I'm going to say what I do, and then I'm going to say what I think most people should do. Typically, I'll hold on to a position, even if it's not working the way that I had expected, because I know what my worst case scenario was, and I'll stick with that. Now, if let's say that I put on some sort of spread where I shorted an option, and I can roll and maybe take in a little bit more credit and salvage something out of the trade, it's still going to be a loss, but not as bad of a loss. I might do something like that. Now, I think for most people, and that's just kind of my mentality, but I also travel a lot, so I can't watch my positions as closely as I'd like to. And I just always have in my mind that I'm holding them till very close to expiration. If you are going to set some risk parameters and plan on taking a trade off and you don't think it's going to work, use the underlying stock or market's price action as kind of what you're going to use to decide whether or not you should get out of the position. Remember that if you kind of follow what I'd said earlier, the reason that you would get into a trade is because you've got an outlook for the stock. Well, what goes on with the stock should actually dictate either your managing action or bailing out on the trade as well.
Okay. Jim, maybe you've never had it happen to you before, but, you know, theoretically, if a position went against you, how would you react?
Kevin was talking about the risk and about the dollars and about having losing trades. I think for clients, biggest takeaway is that you're going to lose. It's part of the game. And you lose, your goal is to lose a little and to have good gains. So think of it as a baseball analogy. You're going for singles and doubles. You're not going for the home run, and you're going to strike out. Striking out is part of the game. So we have small losses and good gains. So with that said, if it goes against me, I already know how much I can lose. If I bought those 10 calls at two, if it goes to zero, I'm up to $2,000 I had to start with. If I bought the calls at $5, I could put a stop order in at three. I could put a bracket order in and put for a profit or for a loss. I could also put alerts on the stock when XYZ reaches a certain price. When it goes against me, I already know the most I could lose. I don't do anything. Russell was talking about when you sell an option. I might do that if I'm definitely still, if I'm selling puts and I'm still bullish. I like the idea of rolling that into the next month, especially if stock is at a low level where I'm comfortable buying it at, getting an additional premium. I know customers who try to ratio out their spread or they make it a spread. They were wrong once and they're going to try to do it again. For beginners, it's a lot easier cutting your hand off before you lose your arm. That's what we would say on the floor. Take the minimal loss and don't look back. Move on to your next trade. For me, I already knew ahead of time how much I have at risk, on the trade. Perfect scenario, though, I might have $2,000 max loss. Yeah, maybe I'd get out when it hits $1,000. $2,000 max loss. $1,000 is my strikeout or my minimal loss, and I'm out for a $2 gain. Find something that works for you. Find something you're comfortable with. But remember, it's a hard number. You don't look back. As soon as you hit that number, you move on to your next trade.
Good discipline. Kevin, position goes against you. How do you approach it?
So I guess I would, to a certain degree, echo what both Jim and Russell have alluded to. Now, going back to something I mentioned earlier, if you write down what your plan is, you are much more likely to stick to it. And if you set down both a target, if things go well, and a threshold to get out if the market, which is going to happen, moves against you, you need to stick to that. Now, my tendency, I know I tend to be stubborn. And so that has helped me a great deal. I skew toward just getting out of a position, because when you start adjusting, really this is kind of like asking yourself, can you manage your ego? because in a lot of situations, that's what you're really trying to do, is not being willing to admit that you were wrong. And that's something you have to learn to do. And for me personally, it's better off for me to take something off and move on and kind of save myself potentially both some real capital and some mental capital. Now, that's not to say there aren't situations where adjusting or being creative where I haven't done that or I wouldn't advocate for it. But I think particularly early on, the more kind of hard and fast you are with whatever your plan was from the outset, the better off you are. You have to learn how to take losses.
And managing that ego, boy, oh boy, that makes an awful lot of sense. We got about 20 minutes, guys, so I think it might be a good opportunity to start to get into the weeds a little bit about different position types. How about if we start on the bullish side, Jim? Give us an option strategy that you like, you know, for a bullish underlying, if you would.
For me, bullish-wise, love selling put spreads, either short-term within a week during an earnings event or probably 45, 30 days or less, especially when you have the big dips, especially where people are
so
panicked. And
yep. Selling a put
spread. Can you
hear me? So, you know, I can, although you're in and out a little bit. You're selling a put spread so people understand. Let's say it's a $50 stock. When you say sell the put spread, you know, walk me through an example.
Okay, great question. I know the stock. I know it well. Earnings are coming up this week, or let's say they're coming up next week, Thursday. I'm looking for that premium, and it will spike usually a day, two, or three. You will know this ahead of time. And the puts get extra expensive. People are panicking because they own stock and, hey, maybe I should buy some protection to the downside. So I know the stock and maybe it dips no more than 5 points on earnings. And maybe it usually snaps up, but let's just say the most it's ever moved was 5 points to the downside. Stock is at 50. I would be interested, if I was very bullish, to sell the 45 put. I need stock to stay above 45. And I'd buy the 40 put for protection, just in case it opened up down way low. If I was a little worried to the downside, maybe I'd sell the 43 put and buy the 38 put. But here's what happens. If stock runs down to 43, I could buy stock. The problem is, what about if really bad news came out? Stock could run to zero. I own stock at 43. Well, that's why I bought the 38 put for protection. I get to sell stock at 38. So love selling put spreads when implied volatility spikes. Love selling put spreads when the market is bearish for no reason. It could be a tweet, and I could get back in for and be bullish.
Okay, so basically you're talking about, you know, selling the bull put spread. I hope folks understand that. Thank you for that. Kevin, how about you? You got a bullish scenario and an underlying. What option strategy do you like to employ?
So options are so much fun. Like, I think it was Jim that used that word earlier, because there are so many different ways you can use them. And there isn't a right way. I work in education, so I'm not advocating for anything. And really, it is a matter of comfort. I tend to be a bit of a contrarian. And so when I analyze a situation, if I am being directional and I have some conviction, I will often, and this is one of the finest outgrowths of the option industry in recent years, weekly options. So if I have a directional bias, and in this case we're saying bullish, there are situations, if I think there's a catalyst, where I will look at the front week or the front 2 weeks and outright buy calls. Now, I know from what we just said about decay and things like that, that it's perhaps not ideal, but one of the tremendous benefits of these short-dated options is that there is relatively little time value built into these things. So in situations like that, it is a scenario where I am comfortable with that option premium potentially going to zero. And you get kind of that gamma convexity, that real kick in the event that you're right. Now, I try to be honest with myself where I realize I need, you know, one or two out of five to be right to come out ahead. Another alternative, and this is something that not every account would probably be permissioned for, but where I have less conviction would be a ratio spread. So just to make the math easy on this thing, let's imagine a stock is at, or whatever, an index is at $50, and I think it's likely to move up 5% over the next month or so. I like ratio spreads where I buy one and sell two. Now, that has undefined risk on the upside because I am net short a unit, and you have to be properly permissioned for that. If you do the 52.5, 55 ratio spread, you can often do that for zero premium, sometimes a credit, sometimes a small debit. Now, understanding that you have undefined risk above 57.5 if you do that for even money is key. And what I'll say is I know I can buy that 57.5 call, turn this into a butterfly if I have to, but ratio spreads, whether bullish or bearish, where you buy one and sell two, you sell to where you're targeting the stock or index to move to, tends to be ways where you can express a directional sentiment, and in the event you're wrong, your premium outlay is going to be very minimal.
Couple good ideas. How about in that ratio example, rather than buy the 57, just to be flat units, you go and buy the way out of the money call. Do you ever consider that?
Absolutely. I said the 57.5 because, like, I can quickly define my risk, just cut it off there. In terms of being unit neutral and using up less premium, that's a fantastic way to kind of satisfy either a risk manager or your brokerage firm, and have a defined risk, some stop point, using that way out of the money option. So good idea to point that out.
And just so our listeners understand, when we're talking about unit risk, Kevin's talking about being net long, or in the example of a ratio spread, net short options. And with net short options, typically you have almost unlimited risk. So by buying that way out of the money, less expensive call, you could at least neutralize being net short units. So just so we understand that. Russell, talk to us about maybe, you know, what you like on the bullish side strategy-wise, and then talk about a bearish one too, if you would.
Absolutely, and it's kind of the same general idea in both directions. And I'm going to, we've had some questions coming in, and one of the questions I saw earlier was, what do you like as a first option trade? And what I'm getting ready to talk about, I think it's a good first option trade as well. What I kind of like is maybe buying a longer dated in the money call or put, call in the case of being bullish, put in the case of being bearish, and then periodically taking advantage of those short dated weeklies and selling those options against the long in the money call or the long in the money put, that have more time until expiration, but probably don't have that much time value to them. And I like doing that to kind of trade around. If I feel like, you know, if I've got a longer term bullish outlook on a stock and I feel like it's gotten ahead of itself a little bit, I might think about, you know, selling a slightly out of the money call that expires in the next few days to harvest some premium there, and vice versa. So that's kind of how I like to look at that. A lot of people think of or will mention a good first option trade is, do a covered call where you own a stock, maybe you have a price level where you're thinking about selling it and sell a call against it. This is kind of the same mentality on the bullish side with the, longer dated in the money call option, just basically representing a long long position in the stock.
That also makes a heck of a lot of sense. It in my mind, raises the thought of where's the risk? Is it delta? Is it gamma? Is it vol? Let me come back to that. Let me ask, you know, strategy-wise one more time. I mean, you know, we know with stocks, indexes, they can only do three things. They go up, they go down, they go sideways. And we can obviously create option positions around each of those scenarios. Jim, sideways market. What, you know, is there a particular position you like to put on?
So you could buy, sell. For me, I'm a seller. I'm a seller premium. If it's sideways, I'd want to sell a call spread or sell a put spread. Sell a call spread if I'm very bearish, sell a put spread if I'm very bullish. If it's within a certain range, stock is trading 50, 60, I would sell maybe the 65 call and buy the 70 call. And maybe I would sell the 45 put and buy the 40 put. I'd do an iron condor. Love it. I would do an iron butterfly as well. I'm a fan of selling premium, especially when the stock is kind of stable within a certain area. For me, I'm a big fan of selling premium. Any stock to sell still, or just, you know, go run up if it's a bull, put spread, or run down if it's a call spread.
Fair enough. Kevin, sideways market?
So I'm going to have to echo Jim's sentiment as far as the condor is concerned, and I'm going to do it with a caveat of I have worked with retail investors that would be introduced to options, would get frustrated with trading directionally, whether they're buying calls or buying puts, and seeing that time decay work against them. They would evolve into spread traders and then into delta neutral iron condor trading. And they would see some success month after month. And statistically, these tend to be strong option positions, right? And the rub happens when you all of a sudden morph from a one-lot iron condor trader or five-lot iron condor trader or 10-lot into a 25-lot guy when you haven't really experienced the outlier month. So I am a genuine advocate for kind of that directionally agnostic trading that iron condors afford you, but understand that every 5 months or like the past couple of months are a reminder that we are going to get 1-2 standard deviation moves from time to time. And if you don't understand how to manage that trade in 2 lots, don't trade 10 lots.
Very good. Russell, sideways market, what do you like?
You know, I'm going to go back to something that Jim said a little bit earlier where he was talking about he got a stock that maybe sold off and he's thinking about selling a put spread. I actually, you know, if you find a range-bound stock, you know, maybe doing a condor, but legging into it from time to time. You know, if you got something that's trading in a 40 to 45 range and we're closer to 40, maybe you do the put side of what would be an iron condor. If we trade up closer to 45 or so, you know, maybe you put the other side of it on. Also, with short-dated weekly options, you can do that sort of thing. And even though you have a neutral outlook, you might not necessarily, you know, have the bullish or the bearish side or the side that you're going to get hit by a drop or a gain on if the stock happens to be at the lower or higher end of a range.
Got it. Let's see, couple quick questions. And Jim, I'll come to you. Any preference, individuals, you know, trading individual stocks, indexes, or ETFs? And then Kevin and Russell, I'll come to you with the same.
Yeah, I can be quick. You know, I get that question often. For me, it's stocks. It's, each one has its own personality. I mean, obviously, if you trade an index, it's going to be flatter. I want those swings. I want that thing to move every earnings. If I have 10 stocks, I have 10 plays I could possibly do if everything falls within range. So for me, it's always going to be the stocks, and it's those stocks I know well.
Kevin, you have a preference?
I do tend to gravitate toward indexes. So, there's not a right answer. I just happen to be more comfortable with that. I like cash settlements as far as a lot of index options are concerned, and kind of the degree of leverage that you can get with the notional value of products like that. Trade small, that would be my bent, at least at this point in life.
Yep, I mean, there we are, two traders, two different opinions. Russell, break the ice here.
Well, it's going to end up being a tie because I kind of do both. I also mix the volatility related markets in there. I spent a lot of time working on those when I was at SIBO. One of the things that I do want to mention with respect to the index complex is especially when I'm, you know, when it's heavy travel season, I really do prefer holding positions through expiration in those because of the cash settlement. So I'm a lot more comfortable if I know I'm going to be out of the country for 2 or 3 weeks to only have on index positions instead of stock positions as well, or stock option positions as well.
Understood. Moving on, trading tools. And any quick offering, Kevin, in terms of trading tools that you really like to depend on?
So I'm going back to the stock thing, and I mentioned that I'm not a huge, looking to trade around earnings. But one bit of advice that I would give to people that are drawn to that, and there are a significant number of option traders that like to trade around earnings, are use something like Russell put together for years and years to have a realistic outlook as far as the expected move around an event like that. In my experience, you see far too many people that trade strike prices that are unrealistic around earnings. And Russell would put together data going back typically 12 earnings cycles, so three years, that gave people a sense of, on average, what type of move can you expect. So tools like that, I think, can be hugely, hugely helpful. And then other stuff, like I will tend to look at just a couple moving averages. I'm not a super technical guy. I think you can draw enough lines on a chart. It's just going to validate whatever you thought originally. But I will be aware of like a 50-day moving average and a 200-day moving average, things like that. I try to keep it relatively simple and have some sense of what a realistic time frame or move is for the time frame that I'm concerned about.
Sounds good. Russell, tools that you like to use?
Half the reason I used to calculate that thing was because I really liked to compare what was going on in the market or what happened in the market relative to those moves. And what Kevin just mentioned is something I think we're going to institute beginning of the year at TAB. So there's a shameless plug. A lot of what I would do as far as trading goes, and this isn't going to help much of anybody, but I basically would program things myself to back test what had happened and then compare what the option market's looking for. So anything that allows you to look at historical moves and then take a look at what the option market's looking for, I think that's pretty useful.
And how about Jim, as far as
any way I could plot IV, implied volatility, know the range for the year, highs and lows. And then, as Kevin mentioned, SMAs on a chart. As a market maker, we never used charts. It was hogwash. You're always delta neutral. It's all about the numbers. Now, as a customer, it's visually easy to see the lows, the highs. You can see implied volatility. You can see swings. Moving averages help you pick strike prices. So, yeah, learn how to use charts, too, just to help pick strike prices.
Investors should know that options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. You should not enter into an options transaction until you have read and understood the risk disclosure document, characteristics and risks of standardized options. This brochure is available by visiting www.optionseducation.org or by calling 1-888-OPTIONS. OIC makes no recommendation with respect to any financial firm. OIC does not make any warranty as to the accuracy, usefulness, timeliness, or the continued availability or existence of information created or maintained by others. Multiple leg strategies involve multiple commission charges. Opinions and strategies expressed by others are not necessarily those of OIC, nor does OIC endorse, warrant, or guarantee products, services, or information described or offered by such firms. Commissions, fees, margins, interest, and taxes have not been included in any of the examples used in this show. These costs impact the outcome of all stock and options transactions. Consult your tax advisor about any potential consequences. None of the information presented in this show should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security or to provide investment advice. You've been listening to the Options Industry Council's Wide World of Options. If you have questions about anything you heard on today's show, email Joe Burgoyne at options@theocc.com. Or you can call OIC's Investor Services at 1-888-OPTIONS. Interested in connecting with OIC on social media? Like the OIC page on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter at options_EDU. Or join their group on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. And be sure to check out our next episode of the Wide World of Options.
The preceding program was a production of the Options Insider Radio Network. For more quality options programs, visit www.theoptionsinsider.com or search for Options Insider Radio Network in your podcast provider of choice. Listeners can also access all of our programming through our mobile app, available in iTunes and on Google Play. Don't forget to follow along with your favorite programs and submit your own questions for the hosts at twitter.com/options, facebook.com/The Options Insider, or via questions@theoptionsinsider.com.